Richard C. Hoagland is the founder and principal investigator of the Enterprise Mission, which is a public policy and research group that has been investigating the scientific possibility of intelligently designed extraterrestrial artifacts across the solar system for a long, long time. Richard also has expanded the mission of the Enterprise Mission because now he looks at real science issues as well in terms of what's happening on this planet. Richard has previously served as museum curator of astronomy and space science, the science advisor to Walter Cronkite and CBS News, head of special projects at New York's Hayden Planetarium, and NASA consultant to the Goddard Space Flight Center. In addition, he is the author of The Monuments of Mars, A City on the Edge of Forever, and winner of the Engstrom Medal for Excellence in Science, and when he was 10 years old, built a rocket that smashed through his neighbor's window. Is that true, Richard? Richard? Well, there is no Richard C. Hoagland. Where might he be? Well, Tommy, why don't you call Richard back and let's find out exactly where Richard C. Hoagland is, and we'll try to get him back in there for us. Richard, of course, will be talking about the Deep Impact space mission. He will be talking about some things that are going on with Mars, and he is back on there now. Where have you been? Where'd you go?
I've just stepped out to Mars for a couple of minutes there.
Okay, just
sorry. You know, different time zones.
You missed my great introduction.
No, I heard your introduction. Anyway, you know, it's been over 20 years I've been doing this with the, you know, looking at potential artifacts on other planets. I mean, that's a generation. It seems like I've been doing it all my life, but it's only 20 years.
Well, how did you get started doing that in the first place?
I got some pictures. I got a leak from some guys that worked at Goddard, Vince DiPietro and Greg Molinar, and I had seen their presentation at a Mars conference at the University of Colorado in Boulder right after I had covered the shuttle, the first shuttle launch with Kevin Sanders for CNN. And on my way home, I stopped by in Boulder and, you know, went to this Mars conference where a bunch of my friends were basically trying to get NASA interested in Mars. In those days, in the wake of the Viking missions, there was no interest officially at NASA in anything having to do with Mars. It was like a dead issue. It's dead, Jim. So there was this group of really smart men and women called the Mars Underground. That's what they called themselves. Chris McKay and Penny Boston and people like that. And they set up this conference and invited a whole bunch of similar kind of renegade minds from NASA and JPL. And I got invited. And it was walking down a hall in the evening at the University Inn where we all were staying that I saw these guys doing a presentation kind of off campus in a room.
Yeah.
And I stopped in and I just got to the end, just got there as they were winding up, and they had done this independent study, computer study. They were computer information experts at Goddard, and they had done the first really computerized study of the official NASA data on the face on Mars. And I'd heard about this years before, and I, like everybody else, had said, oh, come on, that's nuts. And I looked at their work, and I was very impressed with how much more detail they had been able to bring out of the NASA data than NASA had been able to bring out of the NASA data. And I went away. I did not bite. I thought, this is interesting. I have a lot on my plate. At that time, you know, I was working part-time for CNN, and I was also had just been tapped to be the editor-in-chief of one of the astronomy magazines, Star and Sky. And so I had a very full plate. I didn't have time to go chasing after, you know, possible ET artifacts in the solar system. And it wasn't until 83, which was like 2 years later, because the shuttle first launch was in 81.
Right.
And the conference was in 81. In 83, I finally, for other reasons, really stopped to look at some of the original data that they had sent me. And that literally was, it was the week of the anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing on the moon. A lot of big things happened this week in space. And it was in 83 when I looked at this and I said, oh my God, if this isn't a trick of light and shadow, if this isn't, you know, nuts, it's the most important scientific investigation probably in the history of mankind, and nobody was doing anything. So I basically said, okay, I will. And that's 20-plus years ago.
It has changed your career.
It changed
your life.
It changed my career. It changed my life. It changed my perception of NASA as an honest, open agency. you know, as an agency, NASA sucks. It's got super people in it. It's got stunningly bright, honest, dedicated people. It's also got weird bad guys behind the scenes who are playing with us, who are playing with our heads, who are keeping all the good stuff to themselves. And based on 20 years of research, political research, I can say categorically tonight, without fear of meaningful opposition, that's what's going on. And that, unfortunately, is what's going on tonight with this deep impact mission.
It just keeps happening, doesn't it?
It keeps happening because we let it keep happening. And we have an incredible audience, George. You know, those of us that are part of the Coast family.
Yep.
And I certainly consider myself a part of the Coast family.
Indeed.
You know, Art invited me in, and you have kept the lights on and the fireplace going. And I really feel at home here because there are like-minded people who look around the country, look around the world, who congregate in front of their radios every night, this national campfire, as I call it.
Well, Art invited you in, gave me the key, and I realized that you were already in the house and I couldn't get you out.
You need to put more beer in the fridge. That's the one thing I would just recommend. And so it's up to us. It's up to everyone in this audience right now. I'm talking about you there in bed, looking at the radio between your toes, as Johnny Carson used to say. It's up to every one of us to change this for the better. We can do something. I'm going to lay out in the second half hour tonight that I've got, priceless 1 hour on Friday night. I'm going to lay out some of the things we can do. But for most of the people who don't have access to the web who are in this audience, who do not know what I've been writing for the last 2 weeks in my blog, and I got to thank everybody who's shown up and read them.
I love the blog. I absolutely think it's one of the greatest ideas you've come up with for the EnterpriseMission.com website.
Well, I'm just killing myself writing this damn stuff. I'm up all night. Robin never sees me. She's really unhappy. She calls me the blog-it, you know. But it's got to be done.
She doesn't see you because she's too busy on Coast to Coast working on Codex and CAFTA.
And answering her email. And,
that's
and
right.
I actually gave her a guest blog on the Enterprise website. And she got a lot of significant response, and she's thinking of starting her own. So if you hear at some point, George, that Robin and I are separate items, you're to blame.
Okay, thanks, Richard C. Hey, I've got to ask you, before we get into all this tonight,
yes.
You've got to react to the story that has broken where some scientists, not all of them, some say that it implies that Mars has been cold since its inception.
I can't believe you're even bringing this up. This is a quintessential example of what I mean. This is a, I can't say that on the radio,
no,
this
you
is
can't.
A poppycock story. This is a nonsense, meaningless story that's only out there to confuse people, to spin the truth, to keep everybody in this limbo. I mean, for God's sake, the story basically said there's been no liquid water on Mars, right?
And it's been freezing forever. What happened to the warm
planet?
Look at the
damn pictures, folks.
I know.
We've got canyons, arroyos, rivers, erosion. We've got rovers now on the surface with abundant, overwhelming evidence of seas, for God's sake, oceans. And these two turkeys say, oh, it's always been too cold for there to be liquid water.
Two turkeys? Turkeys, you call them?
Turkeys. This is spin control. The one guy's from Caltech. Where is Caltech run from? Or our vice versa, what does Caltech run?
I don't know. What?
JPL.
Oh, yeah, well, okay,
and who
sure.
used to sit at the head of the committee at Caltech that ran JPL?
Who?
Bobby Inman.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Spook. The guy who wore more hats and more intelligence agencies in
the
country.
Admiral.
Than any other living human being.
Well, I will read this line. It says, this new line of research is a puzzle. Giving the contrary evidence of running water on Mars.
Well, yeah, it's a puzzle, only if you don't know how to read the evidence. Look, let's go back to square one. This is why the deep impact story is so critically important, and I believe tonight why they're hiding that data.
Deep
I mean,
impact,
all
of course.
That data.
Just so everyone knows, deep impact smashed into Comet Temple, sent a little probe in there on July 4th, and now...
almost 3 weeks ago.
And now the deep impact itself, where is that? Because that's okay, right?
Well, the spacecraft, the flyby spacecraft, is they did a mid-course correction a couple of nights ago, and they're going to bring it past Earth again, preparatory to another mission.
What can it do?
Well, it can do some interesting things, and we'll get to that later. But
right.
Let me get back to why these stories are all connected. Because the way that the world works now is they try to spin you off so you don't see how to connect the dots. You don't see there's a pattern. There's a pattern between NASA lying about almost everything for the last sort of 40 years, lying about the real conditions on Mars, again, lying about where the data is with Deep Impact again, and lying about the history of the solar system. Here's the connection. If Mars was always really, 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 really cold, then there could not have been life, even microbes, and certainly not probably indigenous intelligent life. Okay, that's the way that logic follows.
Not the kind of life that you and Tom Van Flandert have talked about in
this
program.
Exactly. But if what we're looking at is a Mars that is an incredible victim of a planet that exploded that it once used to orbit, which is the model, and how the Deep Impact data feeds into confirming or disconfirming that model, then this is what that possibility, that possible reality does to the new Mars was always darn cold story. Because they're making this judgment, these two guys, based on analysis of a meteorite that fell on Earth and was picked up and analyzed, presuming it came one time from Mars, right?
Right.
But Tom and I firmly believe, and we got umpteen data, that those meteorites that they've been picking up all over this planet, mostly in the Antarctic, thinking they're from Mars, are not from Mars at all. They're from the exploded planet that Mars orbited until that planet blew up.
Good point.
So if they're measuring argon levels, which is the basis of this, it was too cold, Jim, they're looking at a planet that no longer exists where we don't know what the argon levels ever were. So we don't know what's natural for those rocks, i.e. meteorites that came to Earth. Therefore, the entire presumption of their model is kaput.
By the way, so people don't know that you have really not flipped out, you're calling me Jim because of Star Trek.
That's right.
Okay. Some may not get that. They may think, poor Hoagie, he's lost it.
Well, what was the Bones used to say? You know, I'm not an escalator, I'm a doctor. I'm not a memory alpha. I'm a guy on a mission. And the mission is to get people to wake up, smell the coffee, and realize that you're being diddled with.
Hey, I got a deal for you, by the way.
Yes.
I think next week I'm going to have first hour, I don't know what day yet, Walter Koenig. Chekhov.
Oh, my God.
How would you like to interview him with
me?
Oh,
Walter's an old friend of mine.
You want to do that? That'll be fun.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Anyway, tell me, why are you so upset about the lack of information since July 4th with Deep Impact?
Well, technically, it was July 3rd. It was late at night.
Well, July 3rd, July 4th. But why are you so hot to trot on this thing?
Because this is like a house of cards, Jim. I mean, George.
Well, there you go again.
That was deliberate.
That's right.
This is a house of cards. Or, as my old grandmother used to say, it's a big shawl with a piece of yarn sticking out. And you start pulling on the yarn to kind of make the edges even. And you pull, and suddenly, I mean, there's this wonderful promo on Sci-Fi Channel where there's a guy standing in front of a mirror, and he takes one hair and he starts pulling from the top of his head, you know, like we all do, you know, an eyebrow or something. And you watch the guy disappearing up the screen as he's pulling and pulling and pulling this one long hair. That's the NASA problem. Any piece of data that they're hiding from us is a potential piece of yarn, which if we pull on it long enough, the whole ball of wax will come clean. It will suddenly unravel. We'll figure out what they've been hiding and why they've been hiding it. And the Deep Impact mission is so incredibly blatant because I got to tell you, George, in all my experience with NASA, going back not just 20 years, but going back almost to its beginnings, because remember, I was covering NASA when most of the people listening were not even born, practically. You know, I was with Cronkite, I was in museums, I was, you know, a NASA consultant myself. I have been following this agency like a hawk from day one. And I can tell you again, categorically, without fear of contradiction, they have never done with the public and the media and the taxpayers what they have done with the data from Deep Impact over the last 3 weeks. They have usually overindulged us with information, with photographs, with press kits, with briefings, et cetera, et cetera. There has been this incredible, deafening silence.
Well, that's true. You are right about that.
Deafening. And if you go to the website, for people out there who have computers, and we've been chronicling and cataloging this in the blogs I've been writing almost daily. I mean, the neat part about a blog is it's easy to do almost every day if
yep.
you really want to do it.
Get it up there right away. It's
and we have. They have been recycling the same half dozen images that they showed us the night of the impact for the last 3 weeks. Now, never, I mean, NASA lives on public approbation and money from Congress, right? Right.
They're now even, like, turning the pictures to make it look different.
That's right. They're rotating them 90 degrees and claiming they're new pictures, which, if, of course, you're not following the story, you would not recognize, but we do,
yeah.
And we've called it like we see it, and we have the evidence on the EnterpriseMission.com website. Just go read our daily blog.
Why do you think they're holding back information about this mission?
Well, the lesser of two evils, the lesser paradigm shift, the lesser revolution, is that comets are not, as NASA has been telling us for the last forever, dirty snowballs, primeval relics that didn't, you know, coalesce to form planets back when the solar system was forming. That's been the standard model, that we're looking at these Berge bits, these ice cubes with bits of dirt and dust and silicates thrown in that are kind of like time capsules.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all supposed to go and land on a comet or bring a piece of a comet back or smash something into a comet, and with the observations, thereby prove how planets and solar systems form. Well, the alternative, of course, as we've been on the show talking about some many times with Tom Van Flandern, is that comets and asteroids are the same thing. They're bits and pieces, fragments of the exploded Planet 5 that, for reasons unknown, blew up about 65 million years ago, spraying the shrapnel all over the solar system, smashing into everything that we can see, leaving most of those craters that we see on all the worlds we've now visited, including the moon. And with the rest of the junk leaving the solar system, leaving a tiny residue still orbiting the sun in the asteroid belt, and as these comets that seem to come back into the solar inner system and be warmed by the sun.
Also wiped out the dinosaurs, then.
Wiped out the dinosaurs. Led to our being here. And that's a whole long, fascinating story. We don't have time to get into it tonight. If that scenario is real, it means that it is the dividing line between the solar system NASA's tried to pawn off on us, where it's basically dead, Jim. Remember, that was an old line from Star Trek.
Yes.
All over the solar system, it's dead. To one that it used to not be dead. It used to be alive. We used to have colonies and bases and cities and thriving populations of human beings in an earlier incarnation. Our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmothers owned the solar system. This was our incredible, wondrous experiment. And after, you know, you will know what hit the fan, we basically fled here, a tiny band of refugees, and have been struggling to keep alive and make a civilization work under extraordinarily difficult circumstances ever since.
We were lucky that we had the atmosphere, I guess, to survive, huh?
Well, the planet Earth was basically had enough of an atmosphere to, and was far enough away from the explosion, and had a moon to absorb most of the debris, so that we basically had an environment to come to and come to some level of technology and civilization again.
Stay with us, Richard. We'll be back with you in just a moment. This is going by really fast tonight. But, you know, Richard, when I used to listen to you chatting with Art, when I was just a listener, and I'd say to myself, God, this guy's way out there with some of these theories. And then all of a sudden, the more I listened to you, the more I then started talking with you, the more I began to realize you may not be off by much, if at all. And some of the things that they're beginning to find out specifically about Mars is beginning to back up some of your theories, some of your research, and you didn't have the use of this kind of high technology. I mean, you were piggybacking on things you would hear, things you would see, but you didn't have the equipment, you didn't have the satellites.
Not personally.
No.
But, you know, we've had good sources,
yeah.
And there is public data available if you really know how to dig, because look, there is a war going on inside. There's the cover-up crowd and the let-it-hang-out crowd. And the hangout crowd has got to be very careful in what they put out there, otherwise they get fired or maybe even worse. And the cover-up crowd, you know, wants to no one to ever know any of this because they want status quo. They want people to go to bed tonight as dumb as they were last night and the night before and the night before. And by dumb, I don't mean, you know, stupid. I mean ignorant, not knowing what they paid for. That's what's so outrageous about this mission. We paid $333 million. Now, that number, by the way, is really kooky, and talk to Alex Jones about the meaning of it, okay? It's part of this ritual nonsense that we were looking at in NASA years before it was polite and appropriate to talk about this on you know, open air coast.
Well, I mean, do you actually think, though, that somebody actually said, because of whatever numerology might be involved in this, let's spend $333 million because there's something here?
No, but in a $330-plus million program, what's $3 million? Or if it's $279, what's $27 million? In other words, you can make up any number, George.
True.
You just make it up. You put it out to the press people. You put it out to people like Leonard David and the folks at Space.com, and they dutifully write it up, never thinking that they're shills for people who are dangling them like puppets from the inside. It's all about information. The wars we're involved in now is all about information. And at various times, on various aspects of this information war, real people wind up being killed, like in London and in 9/11 and what just happened in Egypt and all that. That's the tip of the iceberg to a much bigger war going on behind the scenes for stakes that, frankly, are a lot bigger than whether Muslims hate Christians and vice versa. This is so big, George, that the only audience that could even begin to grasp how big this is are the people listening to you and me tonight. We're it. If we don't step up to the plate and do something to change this, to force the information out into the open, no one will ever get the information. And as I said the other night, for want of a nail, the shoe, for want of a shoe, the horse, et cetera, et cetera. So let's talk about what they're hiding, okay?
Okay.
If you go to the website, the official JPL website, you'll see they've been recycling the same stupid three or four pictures for the last 3 weeks. What you will not find anywhere on that website is one even hint of the spectral data from Deep Impact. Deep Impact had two spacecraft with three cameras and one spectrometer doing this experiment 3 weeks ago. The Impactor spacecraft had a little camera, CCD camera, which took pictures right up until the moment that it went splat and was no more, vaporized in a fireball at 6 miles per second when the comet ran over it, literally. It was like, you know, a bug going into the, downstream of an 18-wheeler, splat. While 5,000 miles away, the Deep Impact flyby spacecraft was taking pictures, really amazing pictures, and spectrometer data. Now, what's a spectrometer? It's a device that basically, by remote sensing, can tell the chemical composition of what this sucker was made of. At the moment of that flash of the Impactor collision with the comet, both were vaporized. The Impactor totally disappeared, and a good chunk, maybe something the size of a football stadium, of the comet was vaporized. And in that flash, in the gush of materials from inside the comet into space, where some of the pictures show this incredible spray going, you know, hundreds of miles away, the spectrometer recording on board and then relaying by radio home the chemical composition of this object retrieved priceless data which would directly address the major question. Are comets dirty icebergs, or are they, as Ben Flandern and I have been saying, really asteroids masking as icebergs because of their effluvial emittance of water vapor and other gases? And they're sitting on 100% of that spectral data tonight after 3 weeks. And this is going to sound weird, but this ain't rocket science. There are computer libraries, they're called archives, of spectra, from laboratory measurements, from astronomical measurements, from stellar measurements, from all kinds of experiments, you know, the DOD, the DOE, from everybody on the planet, someone has archived in terms of what things do when you melt them, when you vaporize them, their spectra. So you can punch a few buttons on a computer and you can compare. You know, you've seen CSI or some of these programs where they'll be looking for fingerprints.
Yeah.
And you see the computer go image, 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 image.
Yep.
And suddenly there it stops and it says match.
Yeah, they found
you
it.
Can do that with spectral data. It's not somebody holding a fuzzy piece of film up to the light and saying, well, Jim, I think this line corresponds to sodium. It's done by computers.
They already know exactly.
They know.
What
they
the
know exactly.
Is.
And they haven't told anybody.
Okay, so here's my big question.
They haven't even told the world that they've got this data.
All right, let's assume your assumption is correct, that these are not dirty snowballs,
yep,
that these are asteroids. What's the big deal?
Why not simply
say, hey, we're wrong. We thought for years they were dirty snowballs. We think that they're rock. They're probably asteroids.
Okay, you know there was a network of 60 observatories around Earth that was simultaneously looking at deep impact from Earth 83 million miles away when the spacecraft was looking from just 5,000 miles. Those observatories, one in particular, the Big Keck Observatory on Hawaii that has the two biggest telescopes on the planet, 33 feet across, mirrors each, it got spectral data, which Linda Moulton Howe, bless her, was able to get a scientist, part of the Keck team, to report on her website, which is linked to our website. And this woman, her name is Ann Cochran. She's the deputy director of the McDonald Observatory in Texas. And she was part of this deep impact Keck team that night on Hawaii. She says that they saw a bunch of things they expected to see, but they also saw for 24 hours things that are totally different, alien, foreign, and never before seen, and they don't know what they're looking at. Now, if the Keck telescope, 83 million miles back here on Earth, could see detail enough to see that what was coming out was not normal, can you imagine the stunning clarity and precision and certitude that the deep impact data would tell us if they would tell us? So I'm focusing on why haven't they even hinted to the press, to CBS, NBC, CNN, Space.com, Leonard David, whatever. Why haven't they even hinted at what the spectra contains?
All right, what does your mind tell you?
Because it's even more mind-boggling than simply differentiating between asteroids and comets.
There's something else here.
I think they found something else.
Something could be astounding?
Something astounding. Something mind-boggling.
Something that
changes the whole damn paradigm, George. And that's what, in our next report, which hopefully will be next week, we will have had time to write this up because I want to document it.
Are you saying a structure, maybe? Something like that?
All I'm going to say is something. That's all I can say tonight. We've had some sources in JPL leaking us some incredibly provocative hints. And because this is the game where they try to mislead you, because it's really more intelligence than science, we've had to be incredibly careful to track down and cross-correlate the hints we're getting from inside with our own research. We now have almost critical mass where I can sit down at the computer and write up for Enterprise a detailed paper with documentation, with references, with examples of what it is we think they've really found. And if they found what we strongly suspect they found tonight, this is why they've been sitting on this for 3 whole weeks. They dare not tell us. The whole house of cards will collapse.
Give me a hint.
There is a picture on the JPL website, which is linked to my latest blog tonight, which we updated at 9:51, by the way.
All right.
For everybody who read it, you got to go back and read it again with the new news. That picture on the official website has this picture of the first moment when the impactor struck the comet, and you see that brilliant flash of plasma, superheated, hotter than the surface of the sun, coming out of the comet.
Okay.
Their title for that moment of impact is First Contact.
Oh, come on.
Yes. So just use your imagination, and next week, when we can talk about it, we'll lay out the documentation.
Is this your theory?
With evidence. We have some evidence.
Hard evidence. I'm going to chase you on this one.
You're absolutely welcome to. I hope you will.
Hard evidence, first contact.
Yep.
On what they thought was a comet.
Is something much more important and interesting. In fact, think about this.
Now, you're not telling me what we collided into was a spaceship, are you?
Let me rephrase this, okay?
You're not on a witness stand, Hoagland.
You mentioned a few moments ago that we have this set of videos at the conference called God, Man, and E.T.
Yes.
I strongly recommend, and this is not a pitch to make more money for Enterprise, it's a pitch to make more people brighter and smarter and enlightened so they know what they're seeing when we can lay it out. God, Man, and E.T. basically discussed for 13 hours with a whole bunch of very interesting folks, 90% of which we had on your show a few weeks ago.
Yes.
What will happen to religion, theology, our perception of who we are, our origins, where we came from, where we're going, what the universe really consists of, who's really out there, who made us. in this 13 hours of extraordinary discussion we had. The reason you need to get that as background is because, think about this, we went and we attacked, through NASA, something called Comet Temple 1. NASA attacked the temple. Think of the ritualizers that we have proven exist in NASA over the years. They attacked the temple. That, my friend, was not an accident. And we will lay this out in our evidence, hopefully by next week. Maybe take a little longer, but it'll be.
You better be ready for this one. I told you, I'm going to get you on this one if you're not.
No problemo.
You take your time and get this one right.
Well, it's got to be right. We only have one shot at this, and that's why, you know, a lot of people have been sniffing around this, and we have the big picture. We have some very good people working with us, people like Ron Nix, who is my friend and geologist, and we and I have gone over some of this evidence really, really carefully. We've got inside sources who've been tipping us that there's not all is the way it seems in Mudville.
This thing looked like a pocketed potato to me.
That's right. Well, if you'd been exposed in space after a planet blew up, you'd look a little pockmarked too, wouldn't you?
Well, I guess I would.
Yes. Now, here's another mystery for you to think about. They told us that they wanted to fire this impactor into the comet to make a big bang, right?
Right.
It wasn't an explosion. It was supposed to be kinetic energy. You're traveling along at 6 miles per second, and suddenly, bang, you're stopped by a comet. All the energy gets converted to heat. And we were told the equivalent was about 5 tons of TNT. Go back and look at the pictures on our website or the official NASA website. Does that look like just a lousy 5 tons of dynamite to you?
No, that to me it looks almost like a nuclear explosion.
Except we know from the Newton data, one of the observatories, and Rosetta in space from the Europeans, that it was not a nuke. How do we know that? They saw no X-rays of the flash. And a nuclear weapon would have given us copious X-rays. And so from all the other people who are publishing on deep impact, people like the SWAS team at Harvard and the SWIFT team at the University of Pennsylvania, and I said before, the Keck team in Hawaii and the European Southern Observatory in Europe and the ESA spacecraft, European Space Agency spacecraft, we know all kinds of things about what this was not. We just don't know what it is, because even the Keck folks claim, and I underscore that tonight, they claim they do not know what that mysterious spectra really was. My feeling is they know exactly what it is, and they're as tongue-tied and amazed and mind-boggled as the NASA folks.
Do you think they may also have some pictures that they just don't want to release?
Well, there are no pictures that will reveal this from Earth.
Okay.
From Earth, it's a dot. It was, as my friend used to say, a twink.
What about the spacecraft?
The deep impact spacecraft. Now, get this. Before the mission, the night, just a few hours before we collided, the project manager, Rick Ramier, was interviewed by the Washington Post. And he admitted there was a problem with one of the mirrors in the camera, and they had slightly fuzzy pictures.
Yes,
but
I remember
he said
that.
They had a mathematical technique which had improved the pictures so dramatically that they were better than before launch. Okay?
All right.
Then, a couple of days ago, 2 weeks after the impact, a new scientist story came out and said, oops, it looks like the blurring is so bad that all the close-up images that they were trying to take of the crater they created cannot be corrected mathematically. You will never see it. In other words, folks, we're not going to show you those 4,500 images. That's 4,500 images they admit they're sitting on because they're too blurry. But get this. Yesterday, on the official NASA website, they put this deep impact flyby spacecraft up for bid. They basically put it on eBay. Now, do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
They
yeah.
put a release out saying, okay, our mission is over. If any scientist out there, any group, any institution, any university,
if you have ideas, submit them, right?
Wants to submit ideas and proposals for funding to carry on a new mission with the flyby spacecraft, just submit your proposals, and they have an address and they have people and all that. And I wrote tonight in my update, wait a minute, if the cameras are blurry and the spectrometer fails so we have no spectra, who in their right mind, without knowledge of the data and the instruments, is going to buy this spacecraft? If you would buy this spacecraft from NASA, I got a bridge I could sell you really cheap.
What are you going to do with it, for crying out loud?
Well, this is nuts. This is like, and Robin has said this so often, she said, this is like Saturday Night Live. This is like a skit out of Saturday Night Live, George, except the bottom line is we spent hundreds of millions of dollars and are being snookered by people who say, oh, this is so complicated. Oh, we got to look at all these pictures. Oh, we got to analyze. I mean, it's all done by computer, and you know based on other missions, like the rover missions, like the moon missions, like missions back to the pre-Stone Age of NASA 40 years ago, that if, I mean, I used to watch live pictures streamed from a spacecraft called Ranger crash landing on the moon. Ranger 7, Ranger 8, Ranger 9 sent back live television, and the networks put it out over the air live.
Yes,
every single picture.
Yep.
Now they put out three pictures and hold 4,500 to their chest, to their vest.
All right. I'm going to wait till you're ready.
Like, real, this is a poker game.
Real fast, tell me, the shuttle Discovery, is it ready?
No. And we'll find that out Tuesday, won't we?
Yeah. You think
remember, this is a gang now that's got other agendas than doing what we're being, what we're paying them to do. And unless we focus on, like a laser, making them come clean. Well, how can we do that? I'll reiterate it again next week when I tell you what we think we found here. But the bottom line is, for those who have the web, go to Enterprise, enterprisemission.com. Go to my blog. Read the latest one. There is a web link there for all the congressmen, senators, media, the president, the House committees on science. You've got to inundate these people, fax the death out of these people, so they realize that Americans do give a damn above Karl Rove and, you know, Valerie Plame as to what happened to $300-plus million of our money, which just disappeared, poof, 3 weeks ago, almost tonight.
To be continued. EnterpriseMission.com, Richard's toll-free number, educational materials you might want to pick up and share with your family. 877-345-6222. Get ready, Richard. We'll see you soon.